Welcome on this first evening of July to Evening Under Lamplight, the show that invites you to attend on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. This evening, Under Lamplight, I am inviting us to attend to the theme of fire in various aspects, as you'll see. It's the right season for contemplating that hot, burning fire energy, and as usual, who knows where our journey will lead us tonight. And don't forget our contact addresses. By email at lamplight@cambridge105.fm and at our website at momentsunderlamplight.com. But before we get engaged in our topic, let's take a few seconds out to look ahead to what is going on in Cambridge later this month. In particular, I want to bring your attention to the Cambridge Summer Music Festival, which runs from the 13th of July to the 4th of August. The festival is famous for its concerts and recitals in the most beautiful venues in Cambridge, and for its high-quality performances and variety of musical choices. One of the events I myself am particularly looking forward to is the complete performances of Bach's Brandenburg Concertos, performed on period instruments by Florilegium. This will take place on Sunday, 15th July, at Trinity College Chapel, and is a two-part concert, the first half starting at 4:30 and the second at 8:15, so you can come to one or the other or both. But the festival prides itself on venturing far beyond the confines of strictly classical music. Sounds Green is a series of performances at the Cambridge University Botanical Garden every Wednesday in July from 6:15 to 7:30. You can sit on the grass with a picnic or a drink or bring a chair or walk around as you listen. A collection will be taken for you to pay what you like towards the cost of the musician's fees. But what kind of music will you hear? Well, Gnawa Yinga on the 4th features drums and dance, a fusion of sacred songs and rhythms from Morocco. On the 11th, you can hear three-dimensional jazz, a jazz trio. On the 18th, there is Trovador, a flamenco fusion quartet. And on the 25th, there is the Aurora Wind Quartet. Oh yes, and on the 25th, there is also one of the festival's jazz concerts with the Stan Tracy Quartet featuring Bob Wellens with a tribute to Thelonious Monk. That's at the ADC Theatre at 8 o'clock on the 25th. The final event of the festival on Saturday the 4th of August is a celebration of the songs of Edith Piaf with Yves Loiseau at 8 o'clock at the West Road Concert Hall. There's also music for banjo and harmonica and a varied program of concerts for children, including, on Saturday the 21st of July, Abracadabra, a magical musical journey with members of the Aurora Orchestra and the magician Neil Henry. You'll hear some of Neil's music later in our show this evening. The musicians tell the story of the ugly duckling with the help of a little magic. Come see and hear this, and bring the young ones you know. At the Purse Upper School, Hills Road, brackets, parking available, brackets, at 4:30, that's 4:30, on Saturday, 21st of July. And you can find out more at cambridgesummermusic.com. Oh, and one more related event. The Cambridge Summer Music Festival is also collaborating with the Royal Opera House in presenting Exposure, a major international retrospective exhibition of the work of British photographer Clive Barda, perhaps the world's greatest photographer of musicians, opera singers, and stage performers. The exhibition, currently showing in China, will have its first UK showing here in Cambridge from 17th July to 22nd of July, at the Pitt Building on Trumpington Street. That's the Cambridge University Press Building. It's open from 10 to 4:30 every day. And if you're interested in learning more on the opening day of the exhibition, the 17th of July, there will be a special presentation at the Cambridge Arts Picture House of Clive Barda, a new documentary by filmmaker Philippe Monet, followed by a personal appearance by Clive Barda himself, who will be interviewed on stage talking about the film and his extraordinary career. Does that get you fired up? Check it all out at CambridgeSummerMusic.com. And now back to our theme, fire. First, let's attend to a few literal fires. Here's a short poem by Gina Barreca, who seems burdened with various labels: feminist, professor, stand-up comic. And here she is as a poet, writing about her father's habit of taking the family out with him in the middle of the night to watch houses on fire and to fuel the frustrated rage that was smoldering inside his own self.
When I was 5 in Louisville, we drove to see nighttime fires. Piled 7 of us, all pajamas and running noses, into the Olds, drove fast towards smoke. It was after my father lost his job, so not getting up in the morning gave him time. Awake past midnight, he read old newspapers with no news, tried crosswords until he split the pencil between his teeth, mad. When he heard the wolf whine of the siren, he woke my mother, and she pushed and shoved us all into waking. Once roused, we longed for burnt wood and a smell of flames high into the pines. My old man liked driving to rich neighborhoods best, swearing in a good mood as he followed fire engines that snaked like dragons and split the silent streets. It was festival, carnival. If there were a Cadillac or any car in a curved driveway, my father smiled a smile from a secret, brittle heart. His face lit up in the heat given off by destruction, like something was being made or was being set right. I bent my head back to see where sparks ate up the sky. My father, who never held us, would take my hand and point to falling cinders that covered the ground like snow, or, excited, show us the swollen collapse of a staircase. My mother watched my father, not the house. She was happy only when we were ready to go, when it was finally over and nothing else could burn. Driving home, she would sleep in the front seat as we huddled behind. I could see his quiet face in the rearview mirror, eyes like hallways filled with smoke.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's an oil barge winding down the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's an oil barge winding down the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. City of light, city of magic. Cleveland, city of light, you're calling me. Cleveland, even now I can remember, 'cause the Cuyahoga River goes smoking through my dreams. Burn on, big river, burn on. Burn on, big river, burn on. Now the Lord can make you tumble, the Lord can make you turn, the Lord can make you overflow. Lord can't make you burn. Burn on, big river, burn on. Burn on, big river, burn on.
That was Randy Newman, whom we haven't heard for a while on Evening Under Lamplight, with his song Burn On, celebrating, I think celebrating is the right word here, celebrating the time the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire. It starts off almost pastoral, with the red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake, with a peaceful little oil barge winding down the river. Very placid, isn't it? But look out for that oil barge. It was part of that terrible pollution that resulted in several incidents of the river actually catching fire. Randy Newman's song refers to the 1969 fire, which brought the environmental problems of the river to national awareness. But of course, a Randy Newman song is never straightforward. It curves and twists just like the Cuyahoga River itself. Cleveland, city of light, city of magic, he tenderly addresses the place, even though the light may come from the burning river. And then the final twist. I'm not sure what to call this. It sounds so sweet, but with an underlying sting at the damage human beings do to the world. Now the Lord can make you tumble. The Lord can make you turn. The Lord can make you overflow. But the Lord can't make you burn. Burn on, big river, burn on. It's a perversion of nature to have a river catch fire. But what about a forest? This sort of thing happens all the time to a forest, and it is, for all its devastation, one of the ways nature renews itself. I want to read you a passage from Robert Louis Stevenson about forest fires outside Monterey, California. In fact, it was this passage, which Richard and I were proofreading the other day, that led me to this evening's theme. This description is too good to keep to ourselves, I said, and decided then that I'd share it with you. Stevenson lived in Monterey for several months in 1879, just when the town was losing its old identity and was becoming American. A few months after he left, as it turned out, a huge hotel was built in Monterey, and the place turned into a holiday spot, wiping out the older character, which was made up of Mexican, Indian, and Chinese cultures. His essay is remarkable for his ability to sympathize with these underdog cultures, destined to be bought out and forced out by the power of American money. But before he looks at the cultural identity of Monterey, he speaks about natural features of this region, one of the most prominent being the perfumed smell from forest fires in the surrounding hills. Here's what he says. Attend to how he builds up this complex and sensuous picture. For days together, a hot, dry air will overhang the town, close as from an oven, yet healthful and aromatic in the nostrils. The cause is not far to seek, for the woods are afire, and the hot wind is blowing from the hills. These fires are one of the great dangers of California. I have seen from Monterey as many as three at the time. By day a cloud of smoke, by night a red coal of conflagration in the distance. A little thing will start them, and if the wind be favorable, they gallop over miles of country faster than a horse. The inhabitants must turn out and work like demons, for it is not only the pleasant groves that are destroyed. The climate and the soil are equally at stake, and these fires prevent the rains of the next winter and dry up perennial fountains. California has been a land of promise in its time, like Palestine, but if the woods continue so swiftly to perish, it may become, like Palestine, a land of desolation. To visit the woods while they are languidly burning is a strange piece of experience. The fire passes through the underbrush at a run. Every here and there a tree flares up instantaneously from root to summit, scattering tufts of flame, and is quenched, it seems, as quickly. But this last is only in semblance, for after this first squib-like conflagration of the dry moss and twigs, there remains behind a deep-rooted and consuming fire in the very entrails of the tree. The resin of the pitch pine is principally condensed at the base of the bole and in the spreading roots. Thus, after the light, showy, skirmishing flames, which are only as the match to the explosion, have already scampered down the wind into the distance, the true harm is but beginning for this giant of the woods. You may approach the tree from one side and see it, scorched indeed from top to bottom, but apparently survivor of the peril. Make the circuit, and there on the other side of the column is a clear mass of living coal, spreading like an ulcer, while underground, to their most extended fibre, the roots are being eaten out by fire, and the smoke is rising through the fissures to the surface. A little while, and without a nod of warning, the huge pine tree snaps off short across the ground and falls prostrate with a crash. Meanwhile, the fire continues its silent business. The roots are reduced to a fine ash, and long afterwards, if you pass by, you will find the earth pierced with radiating galleries and preserving the design of all these subterranean spurs, as though it were the mould for a new tree instead of the print of an old one. Well, that's not only a vivid description of these fires, but a good metaphor for a certain kind of burning, which quickly shoots up in flame and then seems extinguished, but in fact is lethally smouldering deep in the heart, destroying the strength until the whole tree, or the whole person, if we make that application, until the whole tree or the whole person falls at once, leaving only print marks of its former self. But there's more to Stevenson's experience with these fires, as he goes on to tell us. Not everyone can make such a public confession about this kind of crime, the way Stevenson does here. I have an interest of my own in these forest fires, for I came so near to lynching on one occasion that a braver man might have retained a thrill from the experience. I wished to be certain whether it was the moss, that quaint funereal ornament of Californian forests, which blazed up so rapidly when the flame first touched the tree. I suppose I must have been under the influence of Satan, for instead of plucking off a piece for my experiment, what should I do but walk up to a great pine tree in a portion of the wood which had escaped so much as scorching, strike a match, and apply the flame gingerly to one of the tassels. The tree went off simply like a rocket. In 3 seconds it was a roaring pillar of fire. Close by I could hear the shouts of those who were at work combating the original conflagration. I could see the wagon that had been brought them and tied to a live oak in a piece of open. I could even catch the flash of an axe as it swung up through the underwood into the sunlight. Had anyone observed the result of my experiment, my neck was literally not worth a pinch of snuff. After a few minutes of passionate expostulation, I should have been run up to a convenient bough. I have run repeatedly, but never as I ran that day. At night, I went out of town, and there was my own particular fire, quite distinct from the other, and burning, as I thought, with even greater spirit. Well, there's a kind of bravado in that final sentence, a bravado born out of shame, certainly. Even though he had promised Fanny Osborne, the woman he was waiting to make his wife, that never, 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 so help him God, would he ever let as much as a whisper of this crime pass his lips. I suppose writing about it was different, and much safer once he was back home 6 months later in Scotland. Barry in San Francisco was saying that there are many fire songs from the 60s, but not so many in later years. Perhaps that was because the 60s was such a fiery time, a time of burning revolution and revolutionary ideas. Songs like, well, Fire by The Crazy World of Arthur Brown, which begins with a hoarse shout, I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire. I'll teach you to burn. That was a typical 60s fire song, I suppose. But is Barry right that we don't find many revolutionary fire songs after the 60s? I can't think of anything to disprove his point. Except for this one that I'll play next, Wall of Fire, from the Kinks' final album, Phobia, in 1994. It picks up themes from Randy Newman's Burn On, contemplating our destruction of the environment. Nature gave us all these toys to play with, but we've abused them each and every one. But unlike Randy Newman's song, and closer to the crazy world of Arthur Brown, the song embraces the fire, perhaps from a deep despair, though this is not immediately apparent. What else is there to do but run through this wall of fire in front of us? Forget next week while we all burn. Let's run right through the wall of fire. Let's have a real fire, death-defying while the flames grow higher through the wall of fire. Let's go through the wall of fire, running through the wall of fire. And we hear the Kinks at their most raucous. We're moving into the heavy, fiery part of the show now, folks. That was the Kinks continuing our theme of fire energy with Wall of Fire. Forget next week while we all burn. We stretched the bounds but always kept the code. It's radical, but sensible advice, actually, as long as we get the right sense of burn. And speaking of burning, you're listening to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge, and I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, leading us further into more aspects of our theme of fire. What about fire as a way of talking about sexual energy? Traditionally, the male, yang, is the heat energy. The female, yin, is the cold. The man brings his fire to the woman as they join together. She is cool because she's hot, or she's hot because she's cool. But what then is Jim Morrison talking about when he tells the woman, baby, he calls her, to come light my fire? Does he have it backwards? Isn't he supposed to light her fire and then they can set the night on fire? Or perhaps, judging by the intensity of the music with its driving force, perhaps his fire is already lit and, as he heats her, he asks her to return his heat, helping them both get much higher. I never knew what all the fuss was about Jim Morrison and the Doors. And then I discovered that a friend of mine in graduate school, someone whose mind and tastes I respected, found Jim Morrison the sexiest and most poetic person in rock music. I've been trying to see her point for many years. Yes, I can see what she means about sexy, especially when we look at that Shayna Punnum on the old YouTube videos. But I still don't see the great poetry. Maybe someday I will, who knows? So here are the Doors, with the shorter version of Light My Fire. I could have played the 7-minute version, but this is not really the occasion for such intense instrumentals, and you have to be either high or hot to make it through the long version. So no, here's the shorter, made-for-radio version. I like the way that that it's not enough to start the song with a bang on the drums, but they have to give it echo as well. Hit us hard, man, then start that crazy keyboard, paving the way for that hot voice.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. The time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on. Time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on.
The Doors, of course, with Light My Fire. We always like to bring on the Rolling Stones, and here's Play With Fire, a song attributed to the whole band, even though it was only Mick Jagger on vocals and tambourine, and Keith Richards on acoustic guitar, with Phil Spector on bass and Jack Nitzsche on harpsichord. There's one of the Stones' underplayed songs, deceptively quiet, even stately with that harpsichord, but there's plenty of fire. The music feels restless, never settled, and the voice sounds gentle, even loving at first, but there's something dangerous underneath, which we occasionally get a glimpse of when Mick's voice suddenly hardens. She's a society girl who used to get her kicks in Knightsbridge, but now that her old man took away her diamonds and tiaras by the score, she has to hang out in Stepney. But she's still looking out for kicks and no doubt insisting on being the one in charge, having it all her way. Ah, but, he tells her, don't play with me 'cause you're playing with fire. So many Rolling Stone songs are about power plays between men and women, and this is one of them. Here, it seems, fire trumps diamonds.
Well, you've got your diamonds, and you've got your pretty clothes, and the chauffeur drives your cars. You let everybody know, but don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Your mother, she's an heiress, owns a block in St. John's Wood, and your father, be there with her if he only could. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Her diamonds and tiaras by the score. Now she gets her kicks in Stepney, not in Knightsbridge anymore. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Now you've got some diamonds, others, but you better watch your step, girl, or start living with your mother. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Well, then, after the Rolling Stones playing with fire, we'll bring on Al Green, a singer who, as far as I can remember, has never appeared on Evening Under Lamplight. There's not much to the lyrics, which just repeat variations on the statement that he's full of fire, with her being his one desire. I like the way his being on fire makes him able to dance with the music, or dance with the burning fire burning low, and sing all night long. He can stay till the party is over, whatever party he has in mind. The horns are hot here, the drums pound through the song, and the voice, well, we listen to an Al Green song for the voice, a smooth, low burning, then bursting out in leaping flames as though scorched by his own heat. Here it comes.
Full of fire, full of fire, full of fire.
Okay, Al Green's Full of Fire. And I'm going to let this song serve as a transition to our next aspect of fire, which takes us to the summer meditation from my CD, Journey Through the Seasons. I play this meditation for you each summer, and it's always good to hear it again and let the imagery settle within our heart in whatever way is suitable for us at this time. Settle back and attend to this meditation, which lasts a little over 4 minutes and contains poetry from Psalm 19 and from Blake, Dante, St. John of the Cross, T.S. Eliot, and Rumi. The music is composed and performed by none other than Neil Henry.
Summer. Now comes summer, the yang season of male energy, hot, piercing, active. We are in the intensity of the element of fire, the color red, the heart. This energy extends to all things, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The danger here, the negative emotion, comes from the misuse of the male energy in violence, arrogance, hastiness, cruelty. We can counter this with the positive emotions of delight, joy, love, creativity. In spring, we discovered our new identity. In summer, we delight in manifesting and exercising this new identity, now mature and radiating out from ourselves and making itself known through desire. What is it men in women do require? The lineaments of gratified desire. What is it women do in men require? The lineaments of gratified desire. Summer fire burns us to cleanse us, a terrifying but essential experience. There may be pain here, but no death. When we remember this, we see that the flame is, in fact, a tender flame. O living flame of love that tenderly wounds my soul in its deepest center. This fire of love rescues us from that other fire, the hellish fire of a life cut off from the sacred. Both can burn us, but one destroys while the other heals. The only hope, or else despair, lies in the choice of pyre or pyre, to be redeemed from fire by fire. This summer energy can overwhelm us. This is not the watery drowning of the winter when we cannot grasp what is going on. The fire shows us all too clearly what is going on. We see good and bad at once, and we know both belong to love. Here is my dilemma. Please help me understand. Your love is a healer. Your love is a wise master. Your love is radiant. Your love is delicate and is soft in its essence. I would gladly endure all this fire, all this yearning, all this burning for your love. But if your love is so pleasant, why does it hurt so much? Love hurts because we are vulnerable. The fire offers light and heat to others. So does love, even to the emptying of itself. Love came and became like blood in my body. It rushed through my veins and encircled my heart. Everywhere I looked, I saw one thing, the beloved's name written on my limbs, on my left palm, on my forehead, on the back of my neck, on my right big toe. Oh, my friend, all that you see of me is just a shell, and the rest belongs to the beloved. Here is the generous, joyous energy of summer.
There we had the mythic, holistic images of summer and summer fire, from Journey Through the Seasons, Meditations on the Five Healing Chinese Energies. I always mention this and do so again just in case you want to see more about that CD. Come to our website at journeythroughtheseasons.com. Supplies of the CD are diminishing, and I'm not sure what will happen when they run out. And now, what Dylan song will we choose for fire? There are many options, some obvious, some not so obvious, but I've selected Shot of Love. The song does not ask for love in the sense that Jim Morrison wanted it. The fire Dylan sings about is the divine fire, fueling divine love. I need a shot of love, as do we all. It's the same kind of thrusting energy in the performance as we've seen in other songs this evening under lamplight. Edgy, passionate, needy. It's a catalogue song, offering a list of things he doesn't need. Don't need a shot of heroin to kill my disease. Don't need a shot of turpentine, only bring me to my knees. Don't need a shot of codeine to help me to repent. Don't need a shot of whiskey, help me be president. I need a shot of love. And the song then mixes religious fervor with bitter rejection, that negative summer energy of those who stand against him, those who have only murdered my father, raped his wife, tattooed my babies with a poison pen, mocked my God, humiliated my friends. This is the secular world, the fallen world that leaves us unfulfilled and restless, confirming Augustine's cry that our hearts are restless until they rest in thee. Don't want to be with nobody tonight. Veronica not around nowhere. Mavis just ain't right. There's a man that hates me and he's swift, smooth, and near. Am I supposed to sit back and wait until he's here? What makes the wind want to blow tonight? Don't even feel like crossing the street and my car ain't acting right. Called home, everybody seemed to have moved away. My conscience is beginning to bother me today. I need a shot of love. But here's what happens when this summer energy fails us, and at least so this song declares, it always fails us unless we have outside help. Who's going to come to light my fire?
I need a shot of love. I need a shot of love. I need a shot of heroin to kill my disease. Need a shot of turpentine, only bring me to my knees. Thank you.
Dylan, Shot of Love. In our summer meditation from the CD, you might have noticed the line from Dante's Purgatorio, "There may be pain here, but no death. Qui può essere tormento, ma non morte." The pain at this point comes from a wall of fire that blocks Dante's path up the mountain of purgatory. He is almost at the top of his journey to purge his soul of all that has soiled it. And there is the purifying fire, with a heat hot enough to melt glass, and he must pass through it. Naturally, he hesitates, but Virgil tells him going through the fire is the only way he can come to see his beloved Beatrice again. And he goes through the fire then, willingly. Love was in the fire, the divine love wanting to purify him, and love was beyond the fire, his heart's desire symbolized by Beatrice. And in our final song, Leonard Cohen's Joan of Arc, these images are developed further. Joan of Arc, led to her death at the burning stake, is weary of it all, a cold and lonesome heroine. But she is suddenly wooed by the fire, who desires her, and she consents to be his bride. And deep into his fiery heart, he took the dust of Joan of Arc. And high above the wedding guests, he hung the ashes of her wedding dress. And then she clearly understood, if he was fire, oh, then she must be wood. I saw her wince, I saw her cry, I saw the glory in her eye. Myself, I long for love and light, but must it come so cruel and oh, so bright? That's what we all ask, isn't it? Must love come so cruel and so bright? It hurts, as the Rumi poem in the meditation reminded us. I would gladly endure all this fire, all this yearning, all this burning for your love. But if your love is so pleasant, why does it hurt so much? And that's what made Dante hesitate before stepping into the fire, the wall of fire, that wall that the kinks dared us to run through. And as I was preparing the show earlier today, Jeffrey in Tiezzo in Italy put up on Facebook this new status. If only there was summer without heat. That's the same question, but focusing on a different level. We all ask this, but what matters is what we do next. Do we turn from the heat or, like Dante and Joan of Arc, step into it? There's the question we'll end with here on Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. Farewell in all levels of summer fire and heat, and I'll see how you've managed when we come back together at the end of the month. And here's Leonard.
Now the flames, they follow Joan of Arc as she came riding through the dark. No moon to keep her armor bright, no man to get her through this very smoky night. She said, I'm tired of the war. I want the kind of work I had before. A wedding dress or something white to wear upon my swollen appetite. La la la, la la la, la 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 la. 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 Well, I'm glad to hear you talk this way. You know, I've watched you riding every day, and something in me yearns to win such a cold and lonesome heroine. And who are you? She sternly spoke to the one beneath the smoke. Why, I'm fire, he replied, and I love your solitude, I love your pride. La la la, la la la, la 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. Then fire, make your body cold. I'm gonna give you mine to hold. Saying this, she climbed inside to be his one, to be his only bride. And deep into his fiery heart, he took the dust of Joan of Arc, and high above the wedding guests, he hung the ashes of her wedding dress. Dust of Joan of Arc, and then she clearly understood, if he was fire, oh, then she must be wood. I saw her wince, I saw her cry, I saw the glory in her eyes. Myself, I long for love and light, but must it come so cruel and oh so bright? La la la, la la la, la 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 la.